නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Actually as a request we were discussing about absorptions jhanas and last time we were able to discuss to some extent This is based on one of the research papers published by Bhikkhu Analayo, A Brief History of Buddhist Absorption. So there we discussed idea about pre-Buddhist absorption. So it is the absorption concentrations were available even before the Buddha and some were able to attain that. And then certain other discussions like like recollection of past lives, what is that, Pubbe Nivasanusati Jnana, and say divine eye, so those kinds of some psychic powers, potentials, requires the fair development of Jhana, and we discussed about that, and then the Buddha's teachers, like before he attained the full enlightenment, he went through in search of teachers, and they are The Alarakalama, Uddhakarama Putta, though they were able to attain Jhana, and that also mentioned in the paper. And then, so Buddha explains that how he attained first Jhana as a young child, and then a certain information is available in the Upakkilesa Sutta, how he was explaining to Venerable Anuruddha. That he has to struggle a little in order to attain jhana before his enlightenment, and then he give a fair account of information to overcome various defilements in order to attain jhana. So that is explained also, and certain potential drawbacks of absorption we have discussed, that someone can get attached to that without getting involved in the vipassana practice. Because jhanic experience would be more blissful and is a mechanism to escape the world. So people can attach to that, so they can addicted to that. So thinking that this is the ultimate. And again, sometimes people can even misunderstand jhanic experience as the maggapala. So that is another pitfall where one is misunderstood. That jhana as maggapala. So then one think after attaining jhana that one has attained maggapala. So that is another drawback. And again, even though one is practicing jhana, it doesn't mean that one is able to overcome the defilements. And this jhanic mind, in case, so that particular person, the practitioner, get on to any particular defilement, that also can be aggravated, that also can be overwhelmed. So as a result of that, he even can disrobe. So that is also we have discussed. And then there's a fairly interesting discussion about absorption and right concentration. And we have discussed in certain suttas how Buddha defined the right concentration. And one interesting sutta is available in the Majjhima Nikaya Mahachattalisaka Sutta, that is Majjhima Nikaya 117. Sammāditti, sammā saṅkappo, sammā vācā, sammā kammanto, sammā ājīvo, sammā vāyāmo, sammā sati. Yāko imehi sattangehi cittassa ekaggata parikkhata ayaṁ ucchati ariyo sammā samādhi. Sa upanisa itipi saparikkhāro itipi. So this is a very interesting and noteworthy point that the sammā samādhi is quite apart from the absorption. Here Buddha defines as the proper balancing of the other path factors. The right view, right intention, and the morality factors, and the right mindfulness, and right effort. So those are to be properly balanced. Then only mind would come or achieve even-mindedness. And so that Buddha refined as the Sammā Samādhi. And on the other hand, certain suttas are there. Samadhi is defined as the four absorptions. And Venerable Analayo reasonably argue that those could be later additions, since monks have had kind of excess bias towards deeper concentrations after Buddha's passing away. So they have included deep absorptions as the Samma Samadhi. So that is also we discussed. And then absorption and the qualities required for awakening. So the Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma, so that list does not contain the absorptions. And then further we are going to discuss about the Vipassana side and insight meditation. So that is what we have to cover today. So basically, so summary here, Venerable Anālaya pointing out, in all of these cases it seems as if with the passing of time, in some Buddhist traditions, an increasing importance had been accorded to absorption attainment as required for progress to awakening. So that has something happened after Buddha's Parinibbana, but we need to explore what his real Samma Samadhi, or what is his importance to the Samadhi. So that is what we need to understand. So absorptions are there, the Samatha absorptions are there, and they are a must to attain jhani, this what you call the psychic powers, like reading one's own past lives, etc., etc. So those are necessary. But here in the attainment, what you call as the realizations, in the insight meditation, so is it necessary to have absorption? So that is what we are going to discuss today. So basically, there's a kind of a debate going on. During the awakening process, is it necessary to have absorption as a prerequisite? Or during the Vipassana process, are we in line with the absorptions? So as I mentioned, the Samma Samadhi is the most important thing, not really the absorption. Samma Samadhi is something that is leading one towards the enlightenment or the awakening. So that is what highlighted in the Noble Eightfold Path. So the Noble Eightfold Path contains Samma Samadhi. So Samma Samadhi, as I mentioned, explained in the Mahachattarisaka Sutta, so that is the balancing of the path factors. The proper balancing of the path factors is a must, and then the mind is in the even-mindedness, and that is what Buddha mentioned as a Samma Samadhi. And now there's a very good explanation given by Mahasi Sayadaw. So he is trying to explain the Vipassana Jhana. So this is a kind of a new addition again, but a kind of a reasonable addition. So there's anyway, people have kind of objected that, and a fair discussion has gone on to this explanation, and Venerable Mahasa Sayadaw also has given a reasonable answer. So an interesting point is here, expressing the debated issue in simple terms without getting into its details, the question is, does the degree of concentration that occurs at the moment of stream entry suffice to fulfill the path factor of right concentration without any need to have previously trained in mastery of normal low worldly absorption? So is it necessary to practice Samatha Jhana in order to attain awakening or not? So now Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw is actually giving insight knowledges as a form of absorption. Now when one is practicing Vipassana, so we know that first of all one has to develop a fair amount of concentration, and that concentration depends on the clarity that one can see the various phenomena. Say for example, if one is practicing Dhatu Manasikara, elements meditation, so it is a must to distinctly recognize these element characteristics. For example, in the earth elements, we know that we have certain qualities like hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness. And then in the heat element, we have that the temperature, that is the heat and cold, hot and cold. And then the water element, we have the fluidity quotient. And then the air element, we have the vibrations, movements. And all these different characteristics one needs to distinctly recognize. For that, one needs a fair amount of concentration. Sometimes we can call it as excess concentration, because it is not an absorption, but rather one needs to be aware, fully aware of all the characteristics. If one is absorbed to something, that one can't do it. Here the idea is that all these different characteristics one needs to distinctly, precisely recognize. So if that can be done, so that is enough for the vipassana. Because vipassana requires very clear awareness to all these different characteristics, and then one is able to recognize what is happening to them. It is those characteristics are changing, and that happens as a matter of fact, as a reality, and that we need to observe carefully. So that careful observation requires a fair amount of concentration. If one has that concentration, one can continue the practice. And during this observation, so Venerable Mahasisayado now presents how the jhana happens. Now these are called the vipassana jhana. So during the vipassana process, now suppose one is placing one's attention on a particular phenomena. It could be an element characteristic, it could be a feeling, it could be even a thought. Now when he is placing his attention again and again to this phenomena, so that means the applied thought is there, the vitakka is there. And then he do a investigation, so that is the vichara, so vichara is also there. Now when that is happening successfully, a certain amount of piti, rapture can arise, so the piti is also there. And when it is again successfully happens, so the previously available or previously felt bodily discomfort and all those difficulties are disappeared. So basically body also feels like comfortable, and the mind also feels comfortable. So as a result of that, the sukha, the comfort or happiness is also there. And the mind is also concentrated, one-pointed, ekagata is also there. So the basic jhana factors necessary to attain first jhana is available here. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata, applied mind, sustained mind, rapture, happiness, and the one-pointedness. So these jhana factors are present, so during this vipassana process. And Mahasi Sayadaw explained, so this is the first jhana according to vipassana tradition. Now when one is continue one's practice, then one can attain second jhana, particularly when he is seeing the arising and passing away. So now he is observing the arising and passing away of various phenomena. So at that time, again and again applying one's mind to different phenomena is not there, but very much like he is keeping his attention at one place. There he can see certain phenomena are arising and passing away, arising and passing away. So very much like the shifting of the mind to a completely different object is not necessary, even though they are also distinct objects, new objects or different objects, so they very much appear at the same place. So it is not necessary to shift one's attention to another place and apply one's mind there. Rather, one can maintain one's attention on the same place, still seeing the characteristics of the phenomena, so basically the arising and passing away. So that is explained as a second jhana. And then when one is continue that further, so this rising and passing away produces kind of equanimity or more mature kind of feeling rather than the happiness. Previously it may be rapture, but as it continues, so this rapture may fades away. Instead, that the kind of an equanimous happiness, a kind of a sublime, peaceful type of happiness may be available. So that is very much the third jhana, where the excess rapture is abandoned. Now kind of comfortable happiness is available. That's the third jhana. And the fourth jhana is more advanced. So that is where one attains what we typically call as Sankharupekkha jhana, where various phenomena are arising and passing away. One is maintaining an equanimous mind towards all of them. Actually, we can explain that in a kind of a more range, in a wide range. At early stage, say the fourth jhana appear like, so different phenomena are available and they are arising and passing away. And now one has very much like dispassionate about it, doesn't have any interest about it. And one has taken one's attention away from that whole picture, and one has the capacity to maintain a very equanimous mind towards all these sankhara. And later, if one can even abandon all these and maintain a very free mind, a released mind, so that is also equanimous. So likewise, this fourth jhana, actually we can say it's also maturing. Even though it starts like equanimity towards all different phenomena, one can even attain an equanimity where there are no phenomena and one is maintaining an emptiness. So that is also equanimous. So basically all these are in a way insights. So insights have these jhanic qualities. So that is what Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw is explaining. And so he explained that as vipassana jhana or insight absorption. And for that he uses a kind of definition. Close observation with fixed attention is called jhana. And there are two types of jhana, samatha jhana and vipassana jhana. Fixed attention to develop only tranquility is called samatha jhana. Contemplating on the three characteristics constitutes vipassana jhana. So basically, now he summarizes the whole situation where if we are able to maintain a fixed attention, so then we can call it as jhana. And there are also samatha and vipassana jhana we can recognize. The samatha jhana is the complete absorption where mind retained fixed. It can't do much of observation. It's very much like locked, absorbed. And on the other hand, in the vipassana jhana, one maintains kind of a balance. One maintains an ability to investigate carefully. So that is not being lost. So the mindfulness and the awareness is fairly available. So concentration is maintained only to the necessary amount so that one can distinctly recognize all these phenomena. So the concentration is not excess. So that is something very important, because if we get absorbed to anything, then we can't do proper observation. So proper observation requires a balanced mind where all these different phenomena are changing, arising, passing away. So that needs to be observed. So that observation is the one causing to develop the insights, wisdom. So that is the process. So therefore, during that time, we can say we are trying to understand the impermanence, unhappiness, or unsatisfactoriness and unself. So that is a vipassana process. So that process actually, we can say, have the jhanic conditions, jhanic say factors. So that is what vipassana jhana. Now, so one basic concentration is sometimes called as excess concentration. So there are the five hindrances are absent, and again one can clearly see all the different phenomena. And proponents of jhana meditation tradition seems to have been influenced, often unknowingly, by the strategic move employed by the Mahasi tradition. This led to an adoption of the idea of vipassana jhanas as states in which contemplation of impermanence takes place, followed by attributing the undertaking of such contemplation to the absorptions in general. So, as I mentioned, we can't say that the absorption is the vipassana jhana, because samatha absorptions are also there, where one absorbed to the fullest and maintains an unwavering mind, but one's mind is very much like locked. So samatha jhana option is also there, so we can't deny that. So that may be the requirement for the psychic powers, like what you call the pubbe nivasa anusati jhana, chutupapata jhana, dibba sota, dibba chakku. So those are the psychic potentials, psychic powers, and that may necessary to have this samatha jhana, samatha absorptions. But on the other hand, if we consider the vipassana process, so such kind of deep absorptions are not necessary. What one needs is a necessary amount of concentration so that one can vividly see the different phenomena. And again, one needs to maintain the ability to properly see the characteristics, properly see the change in nature of these phenomena. There can be little doubt that the way of developing absorption meditation described in Theravada exegesis, in particular in the important Theravada path manual, the path of purification by Buddhaghosa, employs vocabulary unknown in the early discourses and differs from them in various respects. So that's another important thing that we need to understand. So the Visuddhi Magga is actually compiled after 800 years of the Buddha's passing away. So it is not something compiled during the Buddha's time, but as we discussed, so there's a improving and increasing tendency among the monks that they have to maintain very deep absorptions. It's a must to have deep absorptions, and later they include that into the Samma Samadhi also. That's a kind of a trend going on. By the time of Venerable Buddhaghosa, so this trend has fairly inserted to the canon, and now Venerable Buddhaghosa is explaining such kind of things in the Visuddhi Magga. So that Samatha Jhana has now become Visuddhi Magga Jhana. So the Samatha Jhana is actually the very deep concentrations, and that has now explained in the Visuddhi Magga. So another interesting teacher, Lay Bresington, so he explains a kind of a fair explanation. So Bresington, in his paper, he proposed the following possible reasons for this development. My best guess is that the forest monks in the generations after the Buddha's death basically had nothing much to do but sit around and meditate. With this deeply dedicated practice, some of them discovered these deeper states of absorption but fail to recognize them as not being what was talked about in the suttas. All this has had the unfortunate side effects of not only failing to understand what the Buddha was experiencing and teaching, but also of redefining jhanic concentration to such an extreme depth that almost no one could experience it or use it. The Sutta Jhanas, which far more people could attain and use, fell into disfavor and were mostly forgotten. So these are the trends now going on. So the Sutta Jhana, very much like the Vipassana Jhana, where the possibility to observe is retained. So one can maintain enough attention, enough concentration, and at the same time, one can maintain the ability to careful investigation. But on the other hand, the deep absorption doesn't have that capacity. One's mind is fairly locked. The position taken in this way implies that the monks who lived after the Buddha attained substantially deeper levels of concentration than the Buddha himself and his personal disciples. Buddha and his accomplished monastic disciples had to strive hard to gain these shallow absorptions. Nowadays, lay meditators achieve the same quite easily. Actually, we need to understand the shallow concentrations and their maintenance is not easy, because in order to maintain a shallow concentration, one needs to have a fairly purified mind, because otherwise the impact of or the influence of defilements is predominant. So the one way to overcome that is to attain deep concentration. So when one is in deep concentration, as a result of the influence of the deep concentration, so the influence coming from the defilements become less. So if one is maintaining a very calm, relaxed, concentrated mind, even at a less depth, so that indicates his mind is fairly purified. So that is something we need to understand. So the purification of the mind gives an additional benefit to the yogi that he doesn't require a very deep concentration to maintain a purified mind because his mind is fairly purified. So we are, for example, if we consider an arahant, so he may be able to attain jhana at even a very shallow level because his mind is completely purified. And similarly, an anagami, sakadagami, sotapanna, so basic, the influential defilements are fairly subsided, abandoned. And as a result of that, he can maintain his mind in a fairly purified state. And as a result of that, the jhanic experience can be recognized at a shallow level. So that means his mind is fairly purified, his defilements are abandoned. So in that situation, we need to understand, so that when we are talking about jhana, the depth of the jhana is another factor that we need to consider. It is not only the number, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, not only the jhanic factors, but even the depth. So how deeply one needs to attain. So with time passed by, basically monks, certain monks have thought, okay, one has to attain extremely deep jhana. But on the other hand, during the Buddha's time, where the minds are fairly purified, so they were practicing proper vipassana and their minds are fairly purified, and they were able to maintain a purified mind even at a shallow concentration because the influence of the defilements is very less. Now, should you choose to apply the term jhana liberally to states lightly saturated by jhanic factors, please don't presume such states represent the full potential of jhana. So basically, we need to understand, so we can't completely neglect the samatha jhana. So that is also another side that the Buddha taught. As I mentioned, if one needs to attain psychic powers, so this samatha jhana seems to be a must. And it requires a fair amount of practice. But on the other hand, if one is not interested of that, but one is more keen on the vipassana practice, having necessary amount of concentration is okay, and one can continue one's practice on the vipassana. So that actually gives the potential to one to attain jhanic experience while continuing one's vipassana process. As Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw explains, so they are, we can call them as vipassana jhana, the jhanic factors are there, and they are not the samatha absorptions. That is not that the yogi is locked in a particular place, locked on a particular object, absorbed to a particular object. Rather, one can maintain one's attention in an even-minded state, and still one can investigate what's going on. So the investigative ability is available. Investigative ability is retained. Awareness is available. Mindfulness is available. So the concentration is only available to the necessary amount so that one can maintain a consistent observation, a successful observation, a careful attention. So if such is available, then one can continue one's path, practice, and one can say, so when further insights are available, so that takes care of abandoning or weakening the defilements, so that one may attain kind of an even-mindedness at a shallow level, at a shallow depth. Because the influence of the defilements becoming less and less, because one is developing one's mind with the wisdom. Avijja is not there, ignorance is not there. Instead, one is having the understanding or the wisdom. So the formations become less and less, sankharas become less and less. One does not intentionally do much things, rather one is now calming down the formations, sankhara samatha, calming down the formations. So as a result of that, the establishment of the consciousness, nama rupa and vijnana, so that cycle starts weakening, so that the influence coming from that forward cycle of the patissamuppada become less and less, upadana become less and less, clinging become less and less, grasping become less and less. That means the craving become less and less. So likewise, a very interesting fading away of defilements have happened, so one's mind can get released. So that released state of mind, as we discuss as the fourth jhana in the vipassana, so is a pathway to attaining to the magga pala. So sankhara upekkha is typically mentioned as the breakthrough just before the sotapanna state. So one needs to understand that one is maintaining the proper balance, weakening the defilements, maintaining enough concentration, and continuing one's practice, further deepening one's insight, available or achieve the kind of equanimity towards all formations. Now formations become less and less, calming down, and the kind of realization can happen. So therefore, such process can be recognized in the vipassana practice, and that is where we can say a kind of breakthrough could happen. But on the other hand, if one is interested in separately about the samatha experiences, samatha jhana, so that's a different separate topic that one can separately master, so that if necessary one can achieve whatever the psychic powers and etc. So that's a separate topic. And therefore actually we can understand, so this whole topic has various aspects to consider, and it is not merely that we can say that Buddha talked only the samatha jhana. We can't simply say he talked only the vipassana jhana. We can reasonably say that he has taught both. And on the other hand, the depth he talked, and then later depth that the other monks talked, could be different. And the right concentration and jhana, again, that mixing up of that information is also a considerable thing to consider. And on the other hand, as we just discussed, during the vipassana process, we can see that the path factors are properly aligning, the equanimity is happening. So as discussed in the Mahachattarisaka Sutta, one is achieving the right concentration, Samma Samadhi, so that the awakening process can be initiated. So as a kind of a conclusion, Venerable Anadyo mentions here, as for psychological research on meditative experiences mentioned at the outset of this article, the historical development sketched here implies that there are a range of quite different experiences promoted under the label of absorption by various practitioners and teachers. It follows that as a precondition for any research, there is a need to ascertain first of all what type of absorption a practitioner claims to have reached. For example, Yeats and Immergret distinguished absorptions into three types: whole body jhanas, dosed as very light, presser jhanas, explained to be light, and luminous jhanas, with the last being of the deep type among these three. Although the terminology employed is not necessarily ideal, the idea that there are substantially different types of absorption constructs in current meditation circles is certainly meaningful and should be taken into account in future research. So therefore, we can maintain kind of an open mind rather than fixing our conclusion to one side, but fairly we can understand. So different levels or different depths are there, and again samatha jhanas are there, vipassana jhanas are there, right concentration is also a must. And when one is continuing one's vipassana practice, so how a breakthrough can happen? And basically, as a my opinion, I feel, so during the Noble Eightfold Path, when it is sort of happening as a dynamic process, as explained in the Mahachattarisika Sutta, so the mind become more balanced, and so the Samma Samadhi may be happening. And since the all path factors are giving their full, whatever the necessary contribution, so defilements are fairly subsided, understanding is more growing. As a result of that, we can't say that one is in a completely absorbed state, rather one may be in a very balanced state. So the awareness is there, understanding is there, the wisdom is there, the balanced mind equanimity is there. At the same time, one is fully aware what's going on, and then the breakthrough may happen, release may happen. So the right concentration may be there. Okay, I think with that we can conclude the discussion of this jhana, the absorptions, according to this research paper. And I think it's a very interesting subject, and we further can continue our discussion on the other suttas from next time. And if you have anything to add to this discussion, or if you want to contribute anything, now you can take your time. Okay, we have one question from our side. Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you, Bhante. I was wondering a couple of things. One is, I have a couple of questions. Are there teachers that appear to be using jhanas with vipassana well, in that they are using them as a way for people to then cross over into vipassana after achieving jhanas well enough? Do you know if there are teachers that are doing that well, or?
Yeah, that's also there. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I mean, certain traditions are there. What they admonish is that first you need to attain samatha jhana, very deep concentrations, and then you need to start vipassana practice. So that is now, for example, the Pauk tradition. So they say that. So the Pauk tradition requires very deep absorptions as the samatha jhana, and then one has to emerge from that samatha jhana, and now one has to recognize subtle phenomena. It may be physical phenomena, it may be mental factors, and that is their approach. Fairly based on the Visuddhi Magga. The Visuddhi Magga.
Mm-hmm.
So Visuddhi Magga, as we just discussed, we can fairly argue, as the research paper explained, more deeper concentrations are highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
And they even take it as the right concentration.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, that influence is significantly available in the Visuddhi Magga, and that is being discussed as the foundation in the Pauk tradition. So they don't allow any kind of vipassana before you attain the jhana, the samatha jhana, samatha absorptions, very deep concentrations. And after that only they allow one to continue one's vipassana. So that is where we need to understand. So is it a must? So attaining deep jhana, absorptions,
yes,
samatha deep jhana, is it a must?
Yes.
Or we can continue vipassana at the necessary amount of with the necessary amount of concentration, so that the one's ability to investigate phenomena is available, and so that one is able to further and further weaken the defilements and deepen one's understanding, the wisdom, so that the path is continued.
So the PAOK system seems to be taking it to an extreme.
Yes.
So a little excessive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they have taken the Visuddhi Magga as their main source.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the other question is, it would seem that, you know, it would depend on your teacher and, you know, like your teacher's understanding of how, or their development of how they have, you know, what worked for them and what they've seen work for others.
Mm-hmm.
And also to, so the teacher would be an important factor because they're guiding you.
Exactly.
Guide you in the way that they know will work.
Exactly.
And then the other factor is that it seems like the Buddha taught people in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, like, are there instances where, you know, I guess, you know, people that attained realization just by a few words of his probably already had attained great deep concentration that was strong enough, samadhi.
Correct.
Which the path factors are developed and balanced.
Mm.
So that's where they could attain that. But let's say somebody is a modern person who really has a aggravated mind. Maybe they do need to sort of try to practice just concentration for a while without the Vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that certain people might need some jhana practice before they begin Vipassana if they're too, defiled and too, just a worldling who needs to, you know, calm their mind? Is mm-hmm. that possible as well?
Yeah. No, basically one thing is that, say, if one is in extremely different concentration, so one's mind is very much like locked, so you can't move, you can't investigate. So that you lose the investigative capacity because your mind is extremely absorbed to a particular phenomenon.
Right.
So that is why even in the Samatha Jhana approach, as I mentioned in the PAOK tradition, so one needs to emerge from the jhana.
Yes.
And then only one has the capacity to look around and see what's going on and see the mental factors and whatever the subtle arising and passing away.
Mm-hmm.
So that is explained.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, we need to see now, if one is deeply absorbed and if he pass away, but then even Buddha can't approach him. Now that is what has happened to Alara Kalama and Uddhakaramputta. So they were in the Samatha Jhana in extreme levels, at the Arupa Jhana levels, and they passed away, and they have attained the corresponding jhanic states, the Brahma realms, but even Buddha can't address to them, Buddha can't even access to them. So after Buddha's full enlightenment, he actually searched who are the people who has the capacity to sort of understand his teaching, and he found these people are, you know, they have the capacity because they have practiced jhana.
Mm-hmm.
But since they are now passed away and born into those celestial realms, or rather Brahma realms, so even Buddha can't access them. So that means, so some awareness is a must. And while being in the human realm, there are also some awareness is a must. Otherwise, you can't communicate. So while being in the jhanic level, you can't communicate.
Yeah.
You are like in a fridge. You are like in a. You have become very much like a tomb.
Yeah.
Where you don't know much about it. So the concentration has overwhelmed the mind very much like.
Yeah,
so you are deeply absorbed. So, but on the other hand, as Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw explains, so the Vipassana process, on the other hand, maintains that balance.
Yeah.
So you can distinctly see different phenomena, but you are not absorbed to any phenomena, anything. But you maintain very mindful space where you see all the things, what's going on. So you are in a proper investigative ability.
Yeah.
So that is a must for Vipassana.
Yes.
So that's what I feel is more important, because seeing the impermanence, seeing the unsatisfactoriness, understanding non-self, so they are a must in a way.
Yeah.
And that leads to further development of the Vipassana understanding, so vipassana knowledges, insight knowledges.
Yeah.
And that requires kind of a balanced mind, so that you are further and further observing their true nature. That will push you towards further understanding and weakening further defilements. And when the defilements are fairly deep, weakened, then the breakthrough can happen. Now, say for example, now Sakkāya-ditti, thinking that the rūpakkhanda, the form aggregate as a person, as a being, as myself, and then feelings as a person, as myself, or the perceptions as a being, as a person, as a myself. So likewise, so we have that wrong notion, misunderstanding, the personality view. So that has to be penetrated.
Yes.
So the important thing is that they are the jnanas, they are the knowledges that what we need to penetrate that delusions.
Mm-hmm.
So the while being in a very deep concentration, you can't do it. So you would require a very dynamic process to overcome that delusion.
Yeah.
So therefore, I feel that vipassana process is more necessary to achieve that attainments.
Yes.
What I mean is the path and fruition.
Yes.
So there, what one needs is the right concentration.
Yes, I came from Zen, and I was practicing for about 13, 14 years prior to coming here. And when I mentioned that to people, they said, "Oh, that's sort of a samatha practice, isn't it?" And it really is. It was for me anyway, because they gave teachings, but there's a lot of like work practice and you're engaged all the time. So there is like, you're seeing your defilements come up and you're seeing, there's some insight that I found there. But at a certain point for me, I became really tranquil where I would not have any awareness while I was meditating. And that's where I was when I came here. And for me, I found it was very important to get away from that because there wasn't anything I was realizing in that. It was sort of just, very tranquil, but there wasn't any seeing of the three characteristics. And so I do, hearing this argument, it sounds to me like this is the correct way. Mm-hmm. And since it's what the Buddha was suggesting with samasamadhi being enough, and so I feel really confident with this way now. But I don't know, maybe it's different for each person too.
Yeah, actually, I was practicing Pavak method, as you know, for 6 years, so there also we were deeply trying to absorb to this samatha jhana, and then emerge from that and trying to contemplate.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, so the having a proper balance is a must. That now only actually I also understand.
Yeah.
So during that time, I also was thinking that the deep absorptions is a must. So that's why we were dedicating a fair amount of time to develop that. But later I understood that even after practicing Mahasi tradition and, coming to Nisarnavanaya, giving more prominence to Satipatthana practice. So, and again, as we now discuss the Bhikkhu Anālayo's paper, so the Bhikkhu Anālayo's paper is giving a fairly, fair understanding to all what has happened. So the very reasonable argument is there. And what we need to give more prominence is, I feel it is not that deep absorptions. What we need to give more prominence is the right concentration.
Yes.
Because right concentration, Samma Samadhi, is what Buddha highlighted, which is necessary as a path factor. Ultimately the Noble Eightfold Path is something that we have to develop in order to attain realizations. So what that requires is the right concentration, and right concentration, as I strongly emphasize, mentioned as in the Mahachattarisika Sutta, Buddha defines as the proper alignment of the path factors, balancing of the path factors. So there are contribution is available. Say Samadhitti contributes its own, its proper condition, proper proportion.
Yeah.
Sammasankappa is also like that. And then you have the sila, the morality, vacha kammanta ajiva. At the same time, you have the Sammavayama. So the necessary effort is there, and the sammasati, so the mindfulness is also there. So you can't say that you are unmindful. So you have to have mindfulness, so you know exactly what is going on right now. So when all these path factors are properly balanced, then Buddha say, okay, this is samma samadhi. Where the other path factors are giving the necessary, you know, like a protection to the mind, so that the mind has become even-mindedness. And now one is further continuing with development of the sammaditti, the knowing part, you know, the investigation part, the wisdom part, and ultimately a big breakthrough can happen.
Yeah.
The release of the mind, the freedom of the mind can happen. So I feel that is the area that we need to give more focus. Because even though one can attain deep absorptions, it does not guarantee that you are released. You know, as we just discussed, there are various disadvantages of the deep absorptions, that one can addict to that, one can have a thorough attachment to that.
Yeah.
And while you are there, if a defilement arises, you don't know how to handle that. As a result of that, you can get overwhelmed by that defilement, because mind has the capacity to, you know, to multiply the whatever the effect. Yeah. So that can be a real disadvantage to oneself.
Yeah. The way you're explaining this and the way Anayo says the same, arguing, it sounds like this jhanic development is a sort of a sectarian occurrence, where I remember there was a sutta where the Buddha admonished monks because they weren't speaking to each other. They were maintaining silence all the time, and he called them sectarians.
Mm.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
I mean, this kind of reminds me of that. Like, I would almost...
It is not that.
I wonder if the Buddha would admonish these people for taking it so far.
To an extreme.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, that's just a assumption, but it feels...
No, I mean, there is one sutta called Ekavihariya Sutta, as far as I can remember the name. So one monk is not associating with others at all.
Yeah.
So he's doing everything by himself, and he become more popular in that. And then Buddha admonish him, okay, this is not exactly what I meant. What I meant is that you are being secluded by the defilements, not from the others totally.
Yeah.
But how you are maintaining a defilement-free mind or the undefiled mind.
Yes.
So that from you are away from the craving, basically.
Yeah.
So your mind is free from craving, so that is the proper seclusion.
Yeah, and not dependent on whether you're completely away from everybody. It sounds like the Sri Lankan monks who got really deep into the Visuddhimagga and were meditating were maybe sort of like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what we need to be more reasonable and open-mindedness, even though the Visuddhimagga is compiled here in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
So we need to understand what really has happened. We have to maintain that kind of an open attitude to, you know, to investigate what has really gone on. So that's why I really like Venerable Analeo's approach, that he not only investigate the Pali canon, he investigate the other traditions as well. Say the Tibetan tradition, Tibetan canon, and the Agama books, that is the Mahayana canon. So we can get a very fair understanding what has really happened. So then we can trust, I mean we can more confidently say, okay, this is what really has happened.
Yes.
So what was the canon, even the Pali canon, and what has happened during the Venerable Buddha Gosa's time. So how monks have developed deep concentrations, and they thought that as the right concentration, they included that into the right concentration.
Yes.
And at that level, okay, Venerable Buddha Gosa compiled the Visuddhimagga, thinking that as the right concentration.
Yes.
So more and more deep concentrations have now come to the picture as the right concentration. So that's in a way kind of going to an extreme.
Yes.
But what Buddha meant was maintaining a very balanced mind, and you are recognizing defilements, weakening them.
Yeah.
So the things are going on in a more multitude way. Not just deep concentration is highlighted, but you recognize defilements, abandon them. The vipassana process is more dynamic.
Yes.
You know, the satipatthana practice is more dynamic. and the wisdom is also available. It's contributing significantly to the process, and the necessary amount of concentration is also there, the mindfulness is also there, and a breakthrough can happen.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. Yeah. And I just want to say, for Zen, I actually, in thinking about this, Zen really isn't a jhanic practice, because they really safeguard against you. You do everything with everybody else all the time. You follow the timetable. Everybody does everything together. So you're always aggravated by sort of pushed away from becoming too blissful or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a very in-your-face sort of practice. Mm-hmm. And so even though the you know, and when we sit, we in Zen, you'd sit for 40 minutes, get up, do walking meditation for 10 minutes, sit down again for 40 minutes. So mm-hmm. just short periods of sitting. So it's not as if, I mean, I didn't want to give the, you know, impression that Zen is a really a jhanic practice, because I think they safeguard against, they mm-hmm. keep it balanced between mm-hmm. meditation. Although they do meditate a lot, but mm-hmm. they also balance that a lot with work practice and everybody doing things together. So mm-hmm. it keeps you on your toes and awake.
Correct.
So,
correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah, good. So now we can actually get into the others. Maybe Kumudini can put her question.
Bhante, I had some questions to ask, but some of it got answered in the process of this discussion.
Right.
But I wanted to thank you for presenting this paper, which clearly, we started talking about this because there was this comment made by some monks that in order to attain Sotapanna, you have to have jhana and also be able to invoke jhana at will. Mm-hmm. So then there is also, lately I also heard somebody say it is not really necessary, because in Buddha's time, a lot of householders were stream winners, and they didn't have the time to sit and meditate like this.
Exactly.
So, you know, just listening to all this really cemented what we had been discussing all this while.
Correct, correct.
So I'm really, yes. Bhante, another thing is talking about this different vipassana jhanas.
Mm-hmm.
If you do come through the breakthrough, what do you do after that?
The continuation of the practice, same practice.
Same practice,
yeah.
Yes. But the different stages of the jhanas I'm talking about.
Uh-huh. No. Actually, we are not concerned about the jhana.
No, I'm talking about the vipassana jhanas.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what. So basically, the fourth jhana may become more and more matured as we continue. So now the first and second, third are fairly subsided, but one is maturing in the fourth jhana. That's why I mentioned, say, you may be arriving at a stage where you are maintaining kind of an equanimity towards all formations. And so the equanimity is predominant, so you are in the fourth jhana. And later assume that you are being released. So the mind completely free from all phenomena, so that the mind is not associating anything at all, and one's mind is unassociated now. Anicitta and Anupada.
Anicitta sort of thing. You have talked about that.
Anicitta, yeah.
One other question, Bhante, is this. When you sit for meditation, in order to get to that level, should you be going through the different steps? First jhana, second jhana, every time you sit?
Yeah, actually at the early stages it is very much like the same. Yeah, you have to start as a beginner. You assume that you are little sharpen your attention, little sharpen your mindfulness, concentration. Assume, say, using anapanasati, and if your main subject of vipassana is say elements, now only you are keeping your attention onto the phenomena, say bodily phenomena, the element characteristics. So now only you are achieving the first jhana. As you are continuing, you achieve the second and then the third, and again the fourth. So kind of a sequential order is there at the beginning. But later, suppose you are able to recognize the released mind, you are able to recognize unattached mind, non-grasping mind. So there, if you are able to jump to that, now you can continue from there. You don't need to start from the very beginning.
I see. That was my question, whether you need to start from the beginning if you have had the other experiences before.
It is not. So, yeah, and certain suttas, as we discussed, say certain suttas like Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta explains an interesting situation where one is going through the vipassana process and then one achieves a state of mind where almost like samatha, where the mind is free. But the thing is, it has a significant influence coming from the vipassana, significant influence coming from the wisdom, and mind is released, mind is boundless. Now it's a matter of mastering that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
I really appreciate, thank you so much, Bhante, for presenting this talk.
Right.
I have been wondering about it then.
Okay.
I do appreciate it. Many, many to you.
Okay, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, now we can ask
Chitra.
Yeah, Chitra Devi to yeah.
Chitra Devi, you can unmute and talk.
Thank you very much. Bhante, I just wanted to make a comment really to say that I found that was a very balanced view of the jhanas, so thank you for that. I also just wanted to say something that I do read the Bhikkhu Analeo Satipatthana, the direct path to realization, just as a, you know, like a reference book, and very nicely he puts it where he says that the main thrust of Satipatthana can be summed up as keep calmly knowing change. So I thought that was a very nice conclusion, Bhante. I don't know what you think of it, but that's simply his saying what we should be doing for vipassana. Isn't that right, Bhante?
Correct. Yeah.
And I just wonder whether at some stage, you know, you have done it before, but it would be nice if you could take up that refrain in the Satipatthana. You have done it before, but I think in a deeper way, and also touch on the vipassana jnana, because that is also a very important subject. I don't know if you think so, that would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, this vipassana jnana order, actually, we need to again that understand. So during the Buddha's time, during the suttas, there is no kind of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So there is no such kind of numerical order explained.
Yes.
But that is a later addition. But Buddha,
yes,
in general mentioned about say Udayabhaya, then Nibbida, Viraga. Such kind of that's a significant touch is there for various vipassana levels. But the order, like, okay, we have 12 vipassana jnanas, 16 vipassana jnanas, 18 vipassana jnanas. So those are actually later additions.
Because I have seen the Singhala Pota where this I forget his name now, but it was, he had written about the vipassana jnana in Singhala, but I couldn't get the English translation, but that's the whole book is for the vipassana jnana.
Mm-hmm.
You must be knowing that book anyway.
Right. So we'll see, we'll take certain suttas talking more on vipassana.
Yes.
So then we can get
yes.
a kind of a reasonable understanding about the vipassana process. And various aspects are there, actually. So this typical approach that Visuddhi Magga was based on, that is the seven purifications. So that is one approach. That is one approach. But that is not the only approach that Buddha taught, that various other approaches are also there. But unfortunately, only this approach being highlighted. Exactly. So that's what I mean. Yeah. Those are the other very interesting, briefings that Buddha made in many other suttas, like in Anapanasati Sutta. So Buddha explains a very nice comprehensive order, a sequential order there also. Now what he says is, okay, you got to develop Anapanasati, using which you can develop four foundations of mindfulness, that is the four Satipatthana. That will lead you to develop four, the seven enlightenment factors. And when you are succinctly developing seven enlightenment factors, now you attain Vijja and Vimutti, that is the knowledge, that's the Vipassana knowledge and the freedom. So that's the complete path actually. So that is a very interesting path highlighted in the Anapanasati Sutta. So likewise, you know, the Satipatthana related paths or the Patipada are fairly mentioned at here and there. So that is something I really like to emphasize, that Buddha has taught many paths.
Yes. Yes. That is right, Bhatia. As you said, as we go along, this practice and the path, we feel that we are improving with the seven factors of enlightenment.
Correct. Correct. Yes.
So I think that is enough. That, you know, we don't have to sort of be studying the Vipassana. And I don't know. I mean, I'm asking you that as a question.
Yeah, actually, I mean, there may be kind of a parallelism. Say, for example, there are certain suttas where Buddha giving more prominence to, indriyas, the faculties. And certain suttas he giving prominence to the balas, that is the inside powers. And then to the seven enlightenment factors in the Bodhjanga Samyutta. And then he is giving emphasis to four Satipatthana. Then he is giving more emphasis to a Noble Eightfold Path. And then sometimes the Four Noble Truths. So basically that is why ultimately we can say ultimately it is bringing down to 37 Bodhipakkhya Dhammas. So anyway we need to develop these 37 Bodhipakkhya Dhammas, and there are certain overlappings.
Yeah.
Within this. So it is not that the 37 Bodhipakkhya Dhammas are distinct 37 factors, but say for example Sati, the mindfulness appear at 8 places. I think the Virya, the effort appears at 9 places. So likewise, that is this one kind of a quality of the mind, a certain skill of the mind being evolved at different levels. So at one level we call it, okay, that is Satipatthana kind of mindfulness. At another level we call it as faculty level of mindfulness. At another level we call it as Bala, the power level of mindfulness. At another level we call it as a Bodhjanga Sati. And another level we call it as a Samma Sati or the path factor mindfulness. So likewise it is a kind of an evolution of different factors.
Yes, that's right, Bhante. And I suppose we are practicing, so we are slowly realizing that we are improving.
Correct.
Means, slowly we are getting better at these things. So some people say, oh, they have sort of awakening kind of thing when they experience this Vipassana Jnana, but others get it as a gradual thing. Would that be right if I said that?
I think that everyone has to go kind of a gradual development, and we can't immediately predict when a kind of a release, a breakthrough going to happen. So breakthrough can happen at different levels or different methods, as explained in the what you call Vimuttayatana Sutta, where Buddha mentioned about five possibilities in the awakening, five possibilities of opening. Say while you are meditating you can break through, while you are teaching or preaching you can break through, while you are listening to Dhamma you can break through, while you are contemplating Dhamma you can break through. So likewise different possibilities are there, but the interesting thing is you are practicing all that time. So one is practicing, continuing one's practice all that time. But the opening can happen at any of these different doors.
Because, you know, Eckhart Tolle says that suddenly he fell into a pithy hole. Vante, you would have read that?
Mm-hmm.
He suddenly found himself in a deep hole, falling into a deep hole.
Ah. Actually, that falling into a deep hole kind of experience is what happens at the jhana, you know, in the absorption concentrations. Say you are looking at a particular thing and ultimately you get absorbed, you are like falling into a deep hole, you are like falling in or submerging into water, you are being immersed. So that is the type of experience typically happens at the jhana. No. Thing is, so it can happen. So when mind is concentrated and just look at that, just being in that mood, just keep that object on one's attention, so that absorption can happen. And no, the thing is, so we can't say that he or any other. So this particular mind, the trend available in the mind is only started at this life. So these experiences are something that we have gone through, but we have forgotten. And
yeah.
For this life, it is a new experience. But mind has those experiences very much recorded in the past. And when you are properly aligned to that, you go to that.
Because his explanation is that some people do deep meditation and get into that state, but he says he was deeply depressed. And as a result of his deep depression, he fell into this.
Mm.
And that is what he said, that is his explanation, because he never did meditation one day in his life even.
Mm-hmm.
But he said after that falling into that hole,
mm.
he was in a state of bliss. So,
mm. Yeah, definitely. So that's the jhanic experience.
He says that he explains that due to his deep depression, rather than doing meditation and heavy concentration and all that kind of thing. So, well, different people have different ways of realizing, I suppose.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. I don't know. I mean, we can't verify his realization. But basically, the absorption concentrations are like this. So you are trying with one object, you are trying with one type of object, and then ultimately you get absorbed, you are immersed to it, you are being absorbed to it, you are fallen into a hole like thing, and then it is you are in a kind of a bliss.
And anyway, his whole life changed after that, because he was a very depressed,
highly
a brilliant man in the mind, because he had all this PhDs and all, but ultimately he's now very happy after that particular experience, and so he must be an exception, because the ordinary person has to be doing this for many, many years and training oneself. So anyway, that he's one of those rare people, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Yes, anyway, thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Maybe it would be nice if you could touch on some of this in the process of, just touching on some of these vipassana.
Correct. You see, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Radhika, you can unmute and talk.
Thank you. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
I also want to thank you, because I'm not really interested in getting these all these psychic powers, and I definitely don't want to go into the absorption and be in a Brahma realm at the time of the Buddha or the next Buddha, because I'm not going to get arahat in this birth, that's for sure. We are all trying for at least breakthrough and get into Sotapanna, so we will have future births, and I don't want to be in a Brahma realm. So I really appreciate and thank you for giving this, because I still felt that I must go into stronger vipassana, but this kind of nicely put everything into place and gave me the background I required, so that my intuition was complemented with your textual explanation.
Mm-hmm.
My day is a lot of what we are talking about is for people who are doing anapanasati, but because I'm doing more of the Iryapata, what exactly will apply to me? Because I sometimes get confused, because when I hear the the advice given to people who are doing anapanasati, I go try and follow that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure whether it's the identical instruction that I should be getting, and whether I, because of the fact that it's so interesting and it seems so logical, whether I should be switching, not switching, but using the same path, even though I'm doing more of the walking. Now, the other thing is you tell us always to balance it, and I'm not sure about this balancing. So my only way of balancing it, to bring it in, back into tranquility or silence, is through sitting. Now, I try to do 1 to 2 hours of walking, and I'm finding that going really well.
Mm-hmm.
Some days I can't, for health reasons or visitors or whatever, but generally. Now, the sitting part, sometimes I find that when I'm doing the walking, I have a more equanimous and a more calmer mind, but I cannot go into a deeper sense of tranquility or calmness because I'm walking, and the walking is not yet fully, the 1 hour is 1 hour a day or 1.5 hours or 2 hours a day broken is not sufficient,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I have my daily duties. But what I want to know is, should I be balancing it by the number of hours I do in the sitting and the number of hours I do in the walking first, so that I get the balance in the mind? Or what exactly you mean when you tell me to balance it between the vipassana and the calmness, or the not the anapana tranquility, I mean not the samatha tranquility, but the vipassana tranquility?
Mm-hmm. So that you can decide, basically it can vary during what has happened during the day's work. Say for example, say for example, if you haven't gone through any kind of visitors, any kind of turbulence in the life, say if everything happens smoothly, so then that means you don't need a long samatha practice, or you don't need long sitting, but because the mind is capable of maintaining its calmness. But on the other hand, if certain turbulence have gone through, then of course you need to spend fair amount of time to calm down. It is circumstantial, actually.
Right. Thank you so much, Bhante. That's very, very useful for me. And the other one is, I'm finding that I'm not requiring to read as much as I did before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, people want to know about jnanas and all this kind of stuff.
Mm.
I'm not, I don't know why it is, but it's not that I'm losing interest. I really enjoy coming to your class because I understand it so well because it's in English.
Mm-hmm.
And I like reading books in English. But before, I had this insatiable where I was collecting books. I had a huge library and I was reading. And now I'm thinking, I don't need any more of all these detailed knowledge.
Mm.
I'll just do the practice.
Exactly.
And let the Dhamma take me.
Exactly.
So I'm losing interest because this
current trend is something appreciative. So please continue this current trend. Actually, spending more time on reading and forgetting, not investing enough time on practice, is not a good thing. But now a good trend is there. Now you are trying to invest more time on practice, investing less time in reading. So that's a good trend. So please continue in that trend.
Thank you so much, Bhante. Teruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sannai.
Yeshan, you can unmute and talk.
Teruvan Sannai, Swami Nuhansa. So I really enjoy this talk. I think this is one of the questions I had in the past because of different type of information or deliberation or from different disciplines or from Buddhas and from different monks as well.
Mm-hmm.
And very well, talking about even the Buddha. He wanted to sort of go and help some of who can have that enlightenment, and then the Passava Mahanun and a couple of trying to sort of have that power, but they have been born in a different realm, which you basically word it as Bhante, as they are in the fridge. For me, I thought they are frozen in time in that context, the way that I perceive. So I think that is fantastically, and I understood that. So thank you. I had the PDF which you shared last time. I think this has all the details as well to get those reading.
Mm-hmm.
And more than a question, I just want to acknowledge what today's teaching all about. So I'm very impressed. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so those are the questions that and the comments that we have. Then we'll wind up the session. So all the merits that we have accumulated, let's share with all the celestial beings and with past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ākāsatthāca bhummattā devānāga mahiddhikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā chiraṁ rakkhāntu sāsanaṁ. Ākāsatthāca bhummattā devānāga mahiddhikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā chiraṁ rakkhāntu desanaṁ. Ākāsatthāca bhummattā devānāga mahiddhikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā chiraṁ rakkhāntu mamparaṁ. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.